Do you want to open?
Well, you have to read your statement, Deborah.
Oh.
You know, the executive statement.
Yes, yes. Wait a minute here. We're not legal, so we just have a conversation. We don't have a quorum. We don't have a quorum without Alvin, so we can just go ahead. We'll do it when Alvin gets here. So.
Oh, I have a quickie then.
Okay. That's not on the agenda. We're going through our bylaws, and we are talking about having two-year terms for the leadership, kind of like the board is doing. And since we only have three-year appointments, that becomes difficult because somebody may be in the leadership and suddenly their appointment runs out. In the past, when we reported to the GM, we had an informal agreement that if you were in leadership and your term ran out, you would continue your term until the leadership term ran out. But now that we report to the board, it probably needs to be more formal, and we're suggesting that if we make the appointments to the AAC 4 years instead of 3 years, that meant having two-year leadership terms would be easier and would work. And so we just wanted to tell you that's what we're talking about, and so you won't be surprised when you see the final bylaws draft come to you for approval. And if you think it's a bad thing, tell us now, and then we won't fight over it.
We're going to be fighting over these things in the next couple of months.
Yeah.
No, it seems like a good idea.
4 years. Three 4 year terms. Or 3 year terms.
Yeah.
12 years. You're right, either way.
Yeah.
You know, what Patrick just said is do 3 4 year terms rather than 4 3 year terms.
Yeah. And if that's 12 years, but they.
That sounds good. And the other thing I mentioned to Mort earlier, the convention pass, which is a great thing. Society for Neuroscience with 25 to 35,000 members is coming early November, and nobody's told them about it. And I said, we're very sensitive because last time they shut down the convention center for the first weekend of our meeting, the Metro stopped the convention center. And we have poor destitute graduate students come to this meeting, so it would be nice if maybe somebody could be at the convention center telling them about the passes or.
Well, visitors and
Right. I mean, my guess is all the planning for the convention occurred before we had these things had planned out
years in advance.
So, my other question to my own mind was if anybody reached out to TRB.
That's a very good question as well.
The January event. Well,
because there's more than enough time to get
to
that
catch
done.
Up on that one. Yeah.
Good suggestion. Lynn and the Visitors and Convention Bureau.
Year. Oh, I'm sorry. And also fare, training for the drivers, all the other things that we do talk about, the Metro Access drivers and insurance coverage and all that thing. The one thing that they told us that they are going to look into all those things, they have already accessible taxi, Uber taxis available in Chicago. I have used it myself. And also in Miami and I think in Dallas, Texas.
They're in 220 cities.
Yeah, exactly. And they're going to, in D.C., they're thinking very seriously. And one thing that we asked, well, would you make anything special effort for the people who are seniors and disabled for the fare? And they said, we are thinking about that. So I just thought maybe that could be a complement to the Metro Access, you know, so because the demand is so high coming up, and so they could, if anybody wants to take Uber, they're welcome to hire even rather than hiring their trucks. You know, for convenience sake, some people say, you know, I cannot get it, time, whatever the complaint they have. So there will be another way to have the people with disability can have another way to have their transportation, accessible transportation. So that was discussed. Now, if there's any further on this, I don't know.
One of the things they might do is Arlington and the district in Fairfax also has worked out a deal for seniors with the taxi companies so that you can buy vouchers at a discount.
That's right. We'll do that.
And so the counties would have
that's
to work
right.
something out.
But then the county has to work with Uber to make sure they accept those vouchers like the red cab and the yellow cab does that, yeah.
This might have relevance, too, for the districts.
We have a new, you know, the new dialysis service with the district four or two of the cab company.
Two, Mr. Downs.
And a lot of cab drivers switch off the regular cab mode and take Uber and Lyft assignments when their light is off. And so it's possible to have an integrated service if people know how to make it work. It's the problem. It's possible, ultimately, to integrate this kind of taxicab-based access service with Uber and Lyft, but it's not there yet.
And just to add, you know, the district is really leading the way on this with the pilot because the real key is that the customer chooses the service.
Yeah, right.
And as soon as they do that, it's not an ADA paratransit trip, so it does not have with it the cost and the regulation that Metro has to adhere to. So, you know, if customers find their way to those services, either on their own or through some kind of coordinated effort, you know, we're definitely in favor of that. But it is a different prospect than when Metro hires a taxi company, either directly or through a subcontract, because then they obviously do have to conform to our obligations under the ADA.
Yeah, and people need to know that Uber and Lyft, they've already had their first incident that we know about on an Uber where a driver molested a passenger. Yeah. And their drivers, clearly, as their private people, are untrained in securement the way the WMATA ones are. So they really do need to know that it's different. That's why it's less expensive.
But the on-time performance is amazing.
And there's also a different insurance structure as well. That's another important piece of it. So that's why for the ones that WMATA operates, all of that's been attended to. So I think, as Mr. Downs said, some of these things with Uber are in development. But I do think it has a great potential. And, you know, contrary to some of the discussions that have taken place, the existing taxi network probably can in some way peacefully coexist and probably adapt to this new way of using these services. But as I said, with Metro hiring them, as long as they work for us, we're going to be pretty prescriptive about all of those requirements.
Yeah, it works in the district in New York and Chicago because there are a lot of, I won't call them gypsy cabs, but there are a lot of private cabs rather than the large fleet cabs. And so the private folks have their own medallion, they have their own car, and they can do whatever they want. And, you know, in other areas where it's all yellow top, blue top, or red top, you really can't do that because it's not their car.
Well, one other thing about Uber that I noticed that they don't have to stand on the taxi lines, especially if they're accessible. So I remember when I was in Chicago and I was looking for an accessible taxi, so the person just called up and immediately it was there. It was there. I didn't have to wait for anything. It was just like somebody bought my private car. You know.
Boom. Yeah.
It was standing there somewhere in the airport. Came right there. I said, I'm surprised. You know, and it was, you know, it took me to the hotel and everything. So it was very, very useful, you know, for people not to wait, especially if you're in a wheelchair, you know, for a long time and the cold and snow and rain, you know, miserable. So that helps.
Well, the real challenge with Uber and Lyft is accessible equipment.
That's right.
And it's a specialized piece of equipment that takes at least some degree of training before you start.
I agree.
Picking
talk
up
about that. Yeah.
Special needs customers.
Exactly.
So I know we can't have a formal, but we can have a discussion.
Yes.
All
right,
that's a good idea.
Okay.
I just
so,
heard you on, so you can
yeah.
talk.
Oh,
yeah.
Go ahead, Phil.
He's never stopped him before.
Yeah, right.
Now you can hear him.
No. That's right.
So, you know, he's sitting right next to
me. One of the things that came up in our discussions with the committee was the effect of the eliminating some of the bus stops routes with respect to metro access and the grandfathering of existing metro access customers along those routes. We're seeing that, and I don't know if it involves more coordination between bus routes that we're planning to eliminate, but that is coming up more and more with respect to individuals that have had access to metro access and are finding that either
because the route has been
routes have been changed or, yeah. So, I don't know if it would seem to me that we would be able to have, if we had some idea, we could figure out a better way because it's too reactive the way we're doing it right now. By the way, your route's been cut, you don't have metro access.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it grandfathering. Some of the things that have happened is the route has been eliminated completely, and so they've lost their metro access there. The other thing that's happened is hours have changed, so they don't run on Sundays. Or they don't run after 6 o'clock at night. And so something simpler than grandfathering might be that if they took you to work in the morning, they'll take you home at night, even if the bus doesn't run at night. So, I mean, that's a little less drastic than grandfathering in, you know, 24-7.
Yeah, or like if grand policy.
Exactly. Yeah. Or if you can ride the bus from Monday to Friday and you want to go to church on Sunday, we'll take you to church on Sunday, even though the bus doesn't run on Sunday anymore.
Is that the policy, that the alternate trip is only available during the time span that the regular route is operating?
It exactly mirrors the fixed route schedule on outside of the Metro Rail core hours.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, really what we've done, just to kind of err on the side of the customer, is that during most hours of service for Metro Access, except kind of the wee hours, you know, after midnight, we use the maximum footprint of fixed route service all day long. So we don't tell the Metro Access customer, you know, that you know, during those hours.
The bus is 8 o'clock, so you're on a walk.
Right, we're not doing that, you know, and I think that the.
What about day of the week?
Same thing. It's the maximum footprint for weekday and for weekend.
What I'm hearing is if your residence location, let's mm-hmm. say, is within the boundary of the eligibility,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be eligible most times, most days. It isn't enforced directly against the alternate route. We do measure the time on the alternate route. But if the bus isn't running, we measure as if the bus were running, or just
the intent behind it is that you'd make the same choice you'd make if you were taking bus or rail. So if you know that the service is going to be ending at a certain hour, that Metro Access is supposed to behave the same way. But I think an important point, though, about the way we do the grandfathering is when we changed, with the board's direction, the definition of the service area, there were about 5,500 customers who'd been grandfathered, about 20% of the registrants at the time, who had used the service outside of the three-quarter mile corridor.
The boundary before. Mm-hmm. the minimum boundary that we might put in place. But what we're being asked now is about people who are inside the boundary with respect to eligibility, but the boundary has changed because routes have changed.
Right.
That's right.
Eliminated
yeah.
us.
Yeah.
Right.
And that, of course, was by design because, I mean, the grandfathering population was supposed to, you know, through attrition over time, that was supposed to.
That's true, but in terms of equal treatment, these people made housing decisions or employment decisions based on the service
right.
being there.
Mm-hmm. Location.
And
yeah.
we've in some respect, pulled the plug on that service.
That's right. And again, yeah. that's the issue that we face at the policy level is that could happen to a person if a bus route was changed also, if they were a fixed route user.
Yeah,
so
okay.
it's
a fixed route user whose bus went away, mm-hmm. basically we say to them, you're out of luck.
Mm-hmm.
Find another
and
bus.
That's, yeah, and that's right. the issue
the
that we're shooting.
Should we
so
say
get
the same to natural access
right.
customer or should we... make an accommodation.
And what we've done internally with bus stop consolidation, because you know, we talked to the committee about this, that it's very easy for us to simply say that when the candidates for consolidation or elimination of stops are run by our Metro Access database, and when we see that a change in a bus stop would take away service, we're in a position to work with bus planning to just simply not do that, rather than to try to create a really customized grandfather list.
Well, that's what I was trying to hear, because I think bus planning does its analysis of the service. Mm-hmm. We do the public hearings, mm-hmm. and so it seems like we should hear, are you able to look in your database and say, okay, that we have paratransit users in that area.
Whose eligibility depends on that route.
Right. And
that's
so
right.
it should be in the
calculation. So we've agreed at least internally to do that. That
yeah. But can I say I don't think that we have, from my experience at the public hearing process this last round, mm-hmm. we have no understanding in the access community of what the rules actually are. Mm-hmm. I think they need to be as clear as possible. There were a lot of assumptions about after-hours service, reduction in frequency, mm-hmm. and the impact on the access community. I couldn't even answer the questions. Mm-hmm. The answer has to be that you work with the access committee to get a clearer definition of what these potential changes mean. I have talked to Jim Hamry, and Jim's understanding, for instance, of bus stop elimination has no impact. Bus stop about consolidation of stops on a particular route has no impact on access eligibility. It is the route determination. It is within a certain distance of a fixed route bus service that is the determinant of eligibility. It needs a lot of clarification. If there are questions that are vague in our conversations, you can understand how people get confused. There were at least 6 or 7 access users at the last public hearing who were furious about something that turned out to not be either an issue or accurate. There was an assumption that the public hearing process was to eliminate a portion of a bus route. It was not about the elimination of a portion of a bus route. There were several bus stops being eliminated, and that had no impact on access service eligibility.
Well, the point is, it's not eligibility. Eligibility doesn't matter where you live. You can be eligible if you live in Charlotte, North Carolina. But as to whether you can take that particular ride, and we
eligibility had for the service.
Well, eligibility for that particular ride. And we have had people come to our meetings and complain about the fact that they used to be able to go to this dialysis center, but now it's not on that particular bus route. And one of the problems in the analysis is the Title VI analysis, which is a percentage.
Yeah.
And anytime you deal with a percentage, there are so few people relative to the general population, it doesn't show up. And so that's the complaints that we have been hearing. People that have had trips to work or trips to dialysis or trips to specific places that used to be available, and now that a lot of the routes are being consolidated, particularly in Prince George County. I mean, that's where the major people have come in to talk to us about, because they're out in the boonies. No sidewalks, no bus stops, and whatever. So they're eligible, but they have to find a way to get to an area that had within 3/4 of a mile of the bus
service. So you're looking at more the elimination of a line, which then moves the goalpost
in terms of
where they can go.
Not so much the consolidation of the bus stops, because that line still is there. You consolidate the bus stop. But yeah, so I think we're saying the same thing.
We know that the elimination of a portion or all of a bus route affects the access community adversely for all of the people who live along within a 1/4 mile of that route. What was the first confusion was that there were several route reduction or elimination proposals in the hearing docket. There were not. There were none. That was a problem, and it, in effect, had a bunch of people show up, and then after two explanations, they said, we still don't trust you. We think there is a route elimination here. And that's a problem we all need to deal with about explaining exactly what is in the docket. And you, in effect, agreeing with that docket and its impact. But the other is this whole concept of eligibility for service. And by the geographic limits that are imposed here. And I don't get a sense that either we fully understand it or that the access clientele understand it.
When we reduced the original service area, one of the suggestions that we had made was people were still physically eligible. They had passed eligibility. Was that possibly we could set up shuttle points so that they knew if they got to this particular site, they could be picked up. And I know people that live outside the area do have carpools that will get them inside. I know Paul Semmelfoot knows all of the spots. So if you want to go to Dulles Airport, you can go just inside of where the current wheelie stop is, and you can be picked up by Metro Access.
Somebody should take them.
And so, again, something that we could make available to them to let them know where they need to get to in order to get a Metro Access pickup to where they want to go. But, yes, it's a question of education, information, and, again, with the access community, it's not quite as easy.
Well, it's also crisp, accurate, simple explanations of the limits of service so that everybody understands it, whether the policy is completely defensible or not. It's, but you have to start with everybody understanding what is the actual eligibility.
Yeah, we've redone that in a small handout in order to do that, but this is something that people see in the future over the next year, because they have been seeing a lot of the routes change, particularly with National Harbor being developed and what have you. And so the question is there something we can do to mitigate I won't call it damage, harm, inconvenience. It's more than inconvenience when you have to change dialysis centers.
So my thought, going along with what Phil's saying, is when we're looking at not the reduction of bus stops, but when we're looking at, let's say, elimination of routes, is there a touch point within Mr. Hamry's thinking where you look at something like the impact that you would have on Metro Access riders?
What Jim does, I understand from Jim, he has clear guidance that any changes in bus service have to be coordinated through Christian for an analysis about impact on access service. And that's part of every bus system modification proposal.
And that is correct. And I think, admittedly, it took a minute for there to be kind of a realization that tying the Metro Access service area to the fixed route system was going to bring this issue up every time that a change is made. Because on bus service, it really is about the stops. On rail, it's the line. On bus, it's the stops, and it's a three-quarter-mile corridor. So that's why when he was looking at bus stop consolidation, which obviously, if there are too many redundant stops, we're slowing down our reliability. It's a good thing to look at that. But if there is an ability to mitigate the loss of service of a paratransit customer, obviously we're going to do that. The truth of the matter is it doesn't happen that often to that many people because our fixed route service footprint is so dense that even if you take one away, the customer
one away, the three-quarter mile
probably lives
still.
Exactly.
Change the one-mile bus stop.
So what we're, I guess what we're saying here maybe is that we really shouldn't get those complaints.
I think you're all saying that the clarity of the message to the community is the issue. It's the fear of losing the service.
Right.
It's
the
not understanding the implication of service changes or that Metro is going to actually pay attention.
But the people that have come in and talked to us are actual people that tell us they can't get to the dialysis anymore. Or this one lovely woman can't get across the street to her church anymore. And so there are individuals that have physically come in and they've talked to Allison or MTM.
They've talked to Metro Access operations staff about trying to make a reservation. And wherever possible, wherever we're able to kind of go in and verify that the service area map in our system is correctly portraying where that they are in or not in the service area is something that we look at. But we also had some people approach us to say that they used to use the service even some time ago, even prior to 2010, and they felt like, you know, regardless of how old the change was to the service, when they want to be able to use it and they can't use it, it's the same disappointment. And I think that's why going forward, certainly whenever we have these hearing processes, we want people who are coming there to certainly know what really is being proposed and that we wouldn't needlessly, you know, concern people and give them cause to think that we're not taking their paratransit service into consideration. So we did build that process in where Mr. Hamry does compare notes with us, and we do look at our paratransit database before they move forward with their bus stop consolidation proposals. Okay.
But then if there are specific individuals that come in, there ought to be something, and I had asked Christian at one of our meetings to come up with an incredibly restrictive, pointed mechanism that if there is a person that has been in the area, has been using it for a long period of time, and something has changed, that there is some way to handle it. You know, not to make a broad grandfather, and that's why I say I don't like the grandfather phrase, but dealing with individuals that do have a problem, and I think it will be a small number of individuals, but it's still important to somebody. If they can't get to church, if they can't get to their hairdresser, if they can't get to dialysis,
and
have lived there, not someone who's moved in recently, because that's on them. They should know what they
service.
Yeah, but if they have been there, they've been using it for the previous year or years or what have you.
Grandfathering piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But is it possible that, like in Fairfax County, we have fast trans? Mm-hmm. Is it possible that we could negotiate with the counties that they could provide some kind of a transportation for those places where they have this grandfather clause in there, they have to stay 3.25 miles or something like that? So they could bring them to a place where the Metro Access can pick them up.
Well, and I think that would be something that we would have to look at because we, too, have changed our service, the fast van logistics.
Yeah.
And so it would have to go back into those approvals.
And this is, Mr. Downey, you were going to
I was going to ask if you could, Christian, give us a memo that really defines how this issue is handled currently, and then we can look at it and say, is this something we'd like to change and we feel comfortable? So that everybody knows what the rules are.
Yeah, the other thing that's big on the agenda is the bus stop accessibility, and I talked to Kathy before the meeting. I voted this Monday and was surprised and delighted that there's an Arlington County bond issue for money to do WMATA projects with the county. And the first I knew about it was that morning when I kicked up the ballot, so I knew what I was voting on. And other counties in the jurisdiction are going to be doing things like that, and I think WMATA might want to help them in publicizing what's going on. Because when the average voter walks in, they haven't seen the ballot. They know who's running for senator or president or whatever. And then there's five bond issues, and they say, no, 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 no. In Arlington, we had a Parks and Rec, a school board, infrastructure for the county, and then down at the bottom was the WMATA one. And I think most of the Arlington folks who are rail commuters would love to have some more money to put in elevators like we have at Ross Lynn, even though we can't use them anymore, as Clark Construction builds the building. We can't use them, but it's tough. But
I think what we can do is kind of nudge each of our jurisdictions to do that, because they're coming from the jurisdiction for the WMATA support. Mm-hmm. So I think to make sure that we make it clear in the publicity.
They're usually very good about that on bond issues. There's usually great discussion about them, like our streetcar issue and whatever.
I heard something about in Montgomery County. I think they've got a transportation trust fund issue and improving things like bus stops, sidewalks, that sort of thing. So
we have one in Fairfax. Mm-hmm. So we'll just check. Make sure that jurisdictionally we're kind of making
them. And let them know it's a good thing and it's not something everybody's opposed to.
Right. The other
part that I found exciting in one of our presentations had to do with the jurisdiction's assessment of their own bus stops, mm-hmm. and then integrating that with the overall GIS system, which I believe we want to tie with the, and that name just jumped out of my head. The access to the trip planner.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yes. I think that that's just going to be in being able to go back and have the jurisdictions to verify their information, I think might end up a little bit of friendly competition between the jurisdictions. But I think it's absolutely great that you can tie that, the GIS system, into the trip planner. Mm-hmm. And what I see is you've got sort of more specific information from the jurisdictions, and then being able to tie it into the planner, and I think the access to that information is going to be great.
Yeah. The other thing that came up briefly at the meeting, because it had just been posted on the website, the look for volunteers for the new fare system. Now, there are going to be various places, and one of the comments at our meeting was, well, but we can't volunteer because we're on Metro Access. But we do have some folks on our committee that do ride regularly, but they don't live in Boston or one of the areas. But I think it's important for the new fair media that we do have some people from the disability community look at it. And one of the things in the announcement was, when this works, and I'm being very positive because it will work, that it also comes back to this committee, because it was said after the trial, if it works, it's going to be integrated into the new turnstile system. And we saw the first round of turnstiles, and we said we liked the clamshells and whatever, but we'd also think our committee ought to take a look at what the final decision is before everything gets ordered.
Right, so that the pilot is just in order to get the mechanism working, but does the entire system work?
Right, because one of our folks said, this is going to be great because I'm on my cell phone anyway. He's blind, and I'm on my cell phone anyway to find out who's coming in next and what's going where, and so I think it's important to get some disability people using the new system and looking at the final one before it goes out.
Are you involved in the pilot?
I'm a Metro Access person, so I'm a conditional Metro Access person, so unfortunately I don't use it. I can ask my wife to do it because she does pay her way and she works at Boston, so she's one of those folks. And she is sensitive to our problems because she hears me complain to her every night.
I thought I should sign up for it because I use the fixtures with, every once in a while, Metro Access, generally fixed route. I'm thinking, going back to the bus stop from the jurisdiction side, being able to get the data that we want in a timely fashion, just if you had any ideas or thoughts as to how we can make sure that information comes into us, or whether you had a time frame for getting and looking at that information from the jurisdictions on accessibility of their bus stops.
We do an annual review of accessible bus stops within the entire region, where each of the jurisdictions reporting their changes in the status of individual bus stops. I'm not sure that it's uniform reporting, and I don't know if it's the same time frame, but there is an annual accounting of change in the number of accessible bus stops.
And we have the other part.
Yeah, we did a
discussion at finance last time. Where the question was raised, should our goal be improving 1% a year, which sounds like a century to get the job done?
It does sound like a century.
Should we have a fixed number that we could apply?
Well, it's worse than that, because 1% this year becomes fewer numbers than 1% next year when you've made the improvement.
Right. But what I also recall from that discussion was that the rate of improvement was much higher than we knew.
We found that out. We spent all last year getting reports from each jurisdiction, and then when we had the New Hope grant that we looked at, it turned out that Peachy County was in much better shape than they reported to us.
Right, and that's what we found Montgomery as well.
So that was the question. In order to get them, we had each jurisdiction come in and give us a report, which took 6 months. And then we found out that actually they underestimated how good they were in some areas. And so I think that's what Pat's question is. Can we get a more accurate update sort of at one time in a written report rather than having come in with a PowerPoint?
I can report that out in front of my office at 14th and K, a massive construction project underway for some time. And nobody wondered, could figure out what it was about. But I asked Matt, it was accessibility. Ah. And what it is doing is making an access route to get onto the median strip, which is where the buses stop. Ah. It's taken months and millions of dollars.
No, we had complained about that because I go over to D.C. Coast on that particular stop. And Jim said he knew, Jim Hambry said he knew he was aware of it and they were going to start working on it. So it's now safe to go to D.C. Coast.
What we did see on the GIS system that I thought was very interesting, and we wanted to get another report on it, was the accessibility module within the GIS reporting had been really improved. I mean, there were like 15 items that were reportable. And I think that that's going to be useful, particularly if you can overlay the metro access piece to see where there could be intersections, and you could emphasize those bus stops as far as metro access riders, improving the bus stops so that at least they have a choice of whether to use metro access or the fixed route system. The other thing that I think is critical there is being able to build those sidewalks, so that you've got side, you know, it's not just grass or dirt going up to those bus stops, but also sidewalks. I know that the bicycle pedestrian community within the jurisdictions like that also. So you have a sort of a natural constituency there. And then I also know that, particularly within Maryland, they're doing an awful lot with intersection design, putting in accessible pedestrian signals, particularly for visually impaired, in a time frame within at least Montgomery County and Prince George's County, and then throughout the rest of the state in Maryland. So there's an awful lot of work going on there, and being able to share this data back and forth, I think, is important.
Christian, you've been trying to say something. So.
Well, I wanted to make sure I collected all the points. Mr. Sheehan touched on a few things that we actually reported out in our recent presentation to the board on the progress of bus stop improvements. And one of the things that he asked about was, well, how can we make sure that the inventory is more accurate and that we get a better picture of the situation? That's one of the reasons why the new database architecture that we're creating is going to allow direct updating of that information by the jurisdictions, because in the past it's been held by WMATA and collected by WMATA, and sometimes it's a little bit difficult to then try and go and extract this information. So we want to put the updating empowerment into the hands of the people that have the best data available. And, of course, the GIS piece is an excellent tool also because, as Mr. Sheehan said, being able to map all of this against where Metro Access is currently being used helps us to be a lot more strategic in leveraging fixed route resources going forward, looking at the possibility of feeder services and, you know, other things that will help reduce the need for paratransit service dependency. So we're working closely on that. And, of course, the AAC is prepared to begin annual updates on this subject to the board also.
Christian, on the 1% target, the board did have a kind of general sense of recognizing that the 1% was a shrinking target and that a fixed target production going forward was a better way of tackling predictability. I think it would be helpful if you would work with the AAC and develop a consensus around what that number might be and then make that recommendation to the board for a change in its target. Actually, if it's 1% of an incredibly shrinking number, you have an infinite endpoint. You can't ever get there.
Very satisfying.
Yeah. The other thing is, right now, everybody smiled at the finance committee because it's paid for with the grant.
Yeah.
And the question is whether it's going to be included in future capital budgets and other grants that are going to be gotten. Because the first one is gravy. The grant is going to be paying for it, but I think that also has to be put into 2-year, 3-year planning in the capital budget.
Let me see if I can ask a question. I don't want to put anyone on the spot, but I seem to be put on the spot at my office, so maybe, I don't know, at VA, so.
And at the Senate.
Yeah, the Senate, yeah. So if we do and we have a targeted number of installations within a jurisdiction, and I think it would be great to say that we're on target to meet it, or we're going to exceed it, or we're going to not meet our target. That then would at least give us something to measure our progress by, and I think that would be useful. I would think that you would want to see that kind of reporting going forward. I know we can do that in the lighting area, station by station by station, so this would make for a consistent report to you. But I don't really want to be reporting that, let's say, a jurisdiction is underperforming.
Well,
not quite sure how to go there.
I don't think you should fear that, because I do think that's where the jurisdictions are. And I don't think we're at the point of using the same kind of targeting. But once we identify projects, we have due dates that are very clear.
Okay.
Funding, where do we stand in funding, and that kind of information. So it seems like there should be some sense of consistency.
So you have a project manager you're going to hold accountable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Michael, if Mike?
Oh, I'm sorry, I was looking at the wrong place. We don't have a Maryland voting member for the executive committee. If you wouldn't mind coming up to the table.
I've been waiting for a seat.
We have a couple of...
We have a couple of...
I know you want to get up the spot.
So the next meeting is executive session.
No, we do.
Oh, okay.
We can sit at the table so we can read the stuff that we didn't do anything.
You can be out then.
Oh, good. Okay.
Now we have a full executive committee.
Now we can be legal.
Now we can be legal.
Oh, good. Okay.
Morty, do you want to?
We'll do the quickly do the certification for the executive committee. I move that the executive committee certify to the
I guess we have to call the
call. Will you call the meeting to order?
Call the meeting of the board's meeting with the Access Advisory Committee meeting to order.
All right, and as a meeting of the executive committee, we'll take an action to certify. I move that the board executive committee certify to the best of each member's knowledge and with no individual member dissenting that at the October 2nd and October 16th meetings of the executive session of and an executive session of the Board Executive Committee via teleconference, only such matters as are authorized for discussion in the executive session under Board Bylaws Article 10, and only those matters identified in the notice by which the executive session teleconference was convened were heard, discussed, or considered by the Board Executive Committee. Those two motions, which I combined into one.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Do I have permission to vote? Do I have permission to vote?
You've been deposed.
You better know what I'm voting on. I was there at that meeting. Okay, so I'll say yes.
I moved it. We had a second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed.
And we have the minutes.
Oh, we moved the minutes of September. No. Yeah, September 24th. For approval.
September 24th.
A motion made. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Hearing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed. That's the end of the formal business.
That's the formal business. The agenda, there was also an item you had put on about neutral host.
This does what Patrick just talked
about. He did.
Oh, okay.
GPS system, having that incorporated in the bus stop accessibility. So that's what we just talked about. We
actually okay, neutral host to me is the rail.
Yes.
I thought there was an issue with cell phone and the
cell phone. Neutral host is the cell phone access on the rail system. But at least that's the title we all use to talk about that mess.
I know that. Oh, we understand it then.
Yes.
Yeah. When we brought it up before in the past, I know it's something that's being worked on. I'm sure we're getting it. Anything that we can do to push that, that would be great. As far as cell phone
Neutral Host is actually a consortium of the cell phone service providers in the region who are managing the installation of a neutral host system throughout the entire rail system. And they've experienced difficulties in meeting the projected timeframes, and the Congress has had to
extend the date
three times, I think, extend the date for the delivery of the system so that the authority would not be penalized. And I think the next delivery date is...
I didn't see them all.
Technically, it's next week. No, technically we passed it.
Yes.
But by virtue of the continuing resolution and the way the language is written, it's now extended to through the life of the CR, presumably.
Right.
The next CR.
You mean December?
Extended through December, but it'll be extended again, presumably the following. My experience has been it's working pretty much in all the stations.
Between stations.
And under the river.
And so is it, and I haven't seen it, so I don't know, but does that mean that when we go between stations, when this is done, we should be able to have connectivity.
When neutral host is finished, you'll have connectivity in the tunnels as well.
Okay.
At the stations.
So.
And there is a lot of the system. There is no connectivity right now between stations.
Right. Well, that's true. Is there anything we can do to assist or?
The authority
is the Congress of the United States. cause this to happen.
Okay.
I think it's in all of our interest.
I think it's something, it's absolutely something that I think is critical.
Yeah.
I get yelled at all the time, and people have indicated to me, you know, you've been working with Metro for 25 years, and you can't get the tunnels fixed. So they're blaming me, just in case, you know.
When they get finished with you, they blame us.
Well, that's fine. I'll let you know when they're done.
One thing you may hear for our next agenda, we had a long discussion about dwell times and the problem we've had for wheelchair people that don't get seen. On the 7000, because we'll have exterior cameras, it will help. But We've had a number of incidents with wheelchair people that have either been stuck in the doors or not gotten in the doors or what have you, and we had a nice presentation on dwell time. But I think it would be really nice if we knew what the cost of dwell time was, because there is money involved in meeting the schedule and moving along, but there's also a safety issue, which you guys will talk about when we get out of here, of people in wheelchairs that are below the sight line of the drivers, particularly during rush hour, and may be halfway in, halfway out, or as one of our members had his fingers caught. And even though we tell everybody when you hear the ding-ding, it's not your train, they still do it. But anyway, that's just for the next quarterly meeting that we'll probably come and ask you about dwell times.
And so I guess the takeaway from us would be, marching orders from us would be, certainly bus stops, see where we can move the projects along, see what we can get as far as targeted numbers for the jurisdictions. Certainly we will keep track of where we are on the lighting project. I think we need an update on that. I think we are on schedule, maybe even ahead of schedule as far as that's concerned. Have we missed anything that you guys, that all of you would like us to work on? Any more marching orders? Any other focus that we're missing?
I mean, our takeaway was to get clarity on the impact of route changes.
Right.
Route changes and bus stop.
Right. Okay. And it seems to me that what we're seeing on our committee is anecdotal issues that we need to address, but that there's a process between the bus and Metro Access and Access folks so that the impact of eliminating a route is not going to adversely affect
a large number
of Metro Access riders.
Well, I think we will.
Am I understanding that right?
Per Mr. Downey's.
Okay. That's useful to bring back to our people. Not that they'll believe me when I say it, but at least I can bring that back. And that there, and even more important, that there's a way, that there is a process in place for when a route is going to be eliminated. It's not just eliminated without consulting. Okay. And I didn't know that, so.
We didn't know it.
Yeah, okay. Great. That's helpful to us. We'll still get yelled at, but at least we'll have some answers.
Speaking of yelling, I just want to take a moment to, before the meeting adjourned, to apologize for missing the substance of the meeting. And I was at a meeting that ran late. Not only that, I was on the phone and passing people who were coming by here who should have were in here and I didn't get here. But not many things about being on the WMATA board could I earnestly say I enjoy, although I am honored to do it all. But I will say that the meetings with the Accessibility Advisory Committee are one aspect of the work that I actually look forward to doing, and not only because of what I learned, but because of the camaraderie and the engagement that we have. So I apologize to you. I'm sorry I missed it. I promise I will read the notes from the meeting and take my orders as well, but thank you. I just wanted to share that.
We said great things about PG County while you weren't here.
great. And the great state of Maryland, we appreciate it, and we know great things happen. But I apologize, but thank you very much.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I would, with that comment, I would adjourn this committee meeting. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.